All right, here we go. Final show for the week. Mail it in Friday. Overdrive, off and running. TSN 1050 on the TSN app. Your home smart speaker and up on TSN 4. It's Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles McLennan, and Mike Johnson's back in here. And MJ, like you said last Friday, man, whenever you're in here, things happen.
It's always guaranteed, right?
Always content for you.
Without fail. Travis Dermott, at least, what did Joe Thornton drop last Friday? At 5? Or at 6?
Yeah, we had to kill about an hour. It was 5 o'clock. We had 2 full hours of digesting the Joe Thornton signing. I don't think we'll do 3 hours on Travis Dermott. But
can we?
No. Is there 3 hours of material for a seventh defenseman at $874,000 a year?
Did you just call him the seventh defenseman?
Absolutely, I did.
Okay.
Yep, that's where I see him. I see him as the seventh until he proves otherwise. I don't think they're going to gift wrap anything for Travis Dermott.
Who's ahead of him on the third card?
Mikko Lehtinen. I got Lehtinen ahead of him. Absolutely, I do. Yep.
And Bogosian.
And Bogosian, yep.
I don't have Lehtinen ahead of him because I have no idea what he can do at the NHL level. Because Ozhiganov was a big hot shot coming out of the KHL, and the Hockey News can't find him right now.
Did he play opening night or not?
Ozhiganov?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes,
can't
he
remember.
Did. The answer is yes.
It's a great Plovo noodles.
Ozhiganov, just like Mikheyev did. Just like Zaitsev did. The point is, I think to get him, because there were a lot of teams after him, they didn't tell him you're going to sit in the press box. I think he's going to be given an opportunity to play.
Yeah, you're right.
That's my understanding, just based on history. I haven't been told that. But Ozhiganov played, and you're right. It was, oh, look at this guy. What's he going to be? Where? And now you have no idea where he's playing. But he played opening night. He got the guarantee. If you sign with us, we're not going to sit you in the press box. You don't start with the Marlies. You're playing. And I think that's going to happen with Mikko Lehtinen. I think they're going to give him a chance to play. And I think Bogosian is here to play, not every single night. And if he can't keep up, he'll come out. But on my depth chart, I got Travis Dermott, numero 7.
Wow. You're Spanish for 7.
Spanish, English.
Yeah. Spanish, English. You are on fire on a Friday right now.
Am.
And I got to be honest, I know why you're a bit salty.
Oh, I'm not in a good mood.
I need to hear how things went because you screwed up. Mm-hmm. You should have walked away like Costanza the other day, but I think you played golf today and it didn't go well.
I did. I have not been more angry on a golf course since I was a kid learning to play when I had no I had a temper. I had no ability to hold on to my emotions or smother my emotions. I let it all out today. I was so bad. And I'm still angry. I'm furious because I should have quit. After 76, I should have quit. Today I was slashing it around. I was ruining the afternoon. It was a beautiful day. Like the weather is just gorgeous outside. And I couldn't appreciate it. I should have just said, who cares if I shoot 200 today? It's late October and 20 degrees. I'm in a golf shirt playing golf. This is great.
Hayes.
But I couldn't.
My life lesson to you on a Friday is this. Mm-hmm. I was playing golf with one of my dad's friends a few years ago, who's an older gentleman, good golfer. And I'm whatever, same as you, 10 handicap kind of golfer. I'm okay, I'm not great. Mm-hmm. And I was slashing it around. I was getting angry and frustrated. And I don't know this guy. He's like one of my dad's buddies. I've only met him once. He looks at me, he's like, what are you out here for? Just, you know, have some fun, hang out with my dad. He's like, are you having fun? I'm like, yeah, it's been okay. And he looked at me dead in the eye and just said, you're not good enough to get upset. And I'm like, ooh, well, excuse me. And then he just kept walking. He just like just went on the rest of the round. And I'm like, he's right.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
And like there's moments where I snap and lose it at ping pong or basketball or tennis or golf. But like there's some truth to that. You're not good enough to get that bad.
It's 100% true. It's 100% true. But if I didn't play the round of my life a few days ago and start well today, which I did, I was rolling through about 5 holes, then I think that is advice I would have adhered to, but I couldn't do it, Johnny. I couldn't do it.
Do you
I was throw losing
club
my mind.
Or just curse?
Well, I just have one question, Johnny.
I try to avoid the tossing of a club. I don't toss a club, but I will drop a club, if you know what I mean. Like, you know what I'm saying. Like, off a tee, if you spray one right, you just drop it. Like, I'll do that 2 or 3 times around if it's going south for me. But
was the guy's name that you were talking to, Johnny, was it Jeff O'Neill? Because I feel like O-Dog would say that to Hayes, like, bold face and then just walk away. Because he does say things like that on the course, does he not? Like, pick up the ball or, you know, just, like, let's move on here.
Yeah, but he doesn't say it for your benefit. He says it for his own benefit. It's so that he can continue with his round. He's not interested right. in helping you find your ball or anything along those lines. He's not going exactly. zen on you. But I probably should I should acknowledge that, and I probably should go with that, Johnny. But I just couldn't do it today. I felt like a child on the back nine.
Yeah,
I picked up a couple times and I just went back to the cart. I'm like, I can't believe I'm doing this again.
Full pout on
full
for
pout.
A couple hours. It's
full
hard to
pout.
Do.
It's very tough to do. And I tried not to ruin it for the other three because we were playing with, you know, Carla was out there, the grappler, our boy Troy, who's a younger guy, and he was playing pretty well. And I'm not going to ever get too rattled to the point where I ruin anyone else's day. You know, I'm not getting sour on anyone else. It's my own problem, my own fault. But it is what it is. I should have gone Costanza. I should have packed the clubs away for the year,
That's
but
it.
I didn't. And now I got to grind next week when it's 2 degrees and raining. I'll be out there playing because I have to. I can't end on,
now you get,
on
yeah,
a sour
you got,
note.
Now, was it something with a 9 in it? Was it that bad?
I doubled 18 for a 90.
Okay.
Yeah. Double. So not, it wasn't brutal.
It's not horrendous.
It's not horrendous, but when
but
you know,
coming off a 76, where a lot of things are going right, and you think you're treading in the right direction, maybe going to push, I'm going to get around even par, and all of a sudden, wait a second, dial
and
back.
And that was it. That was it. I was one over through five, playing well, grinding, putting well, and then the wheels fell off. But it is what it is, all right? Serenity now, it's all good. With all due respect to Travis Dermott.
I was just going to say, the minute that you shot a 90, Travis Dermott was a seventh on your depth chart.
Yeah,
no, I am being serious. I do legitimately have him seventh. I am being serious, though. I think the contract is separate. Like, we knew this coming in. He had no leverage, no rights. He was getting squeezed.
Yeah.
It would appear to me the Leafs called him and said, you know, it's got to be under 875, so you come back with the number, and it's like 874, 983 or something. A
couple hundred
like
bucks.
Yeah, and the Leafs just said, you know, call us when you're ready to take it, or if you don't show up for camp, whatever. You know, we're moving on without you. And I think it's a smart play by him. Take it, sign it. There's only so much you can get. He has not established himself, in my opinion, as an everyday NHLer yet. You know, I know he played a lot of games, but he's a third-pairing guy until he proves otherwise. And I'm not saying that Travis Dermott can't or won't have a great camp and then a great year. You know, he's got the talent. He's just not put it together. And I think they value Justin Hall more than they do Travis Dermott. I think they like his game more. I think where he played in the lineup last year would suggest it. Different contractual scenario because he would have been a UFA. He's older. But they gave him 3 years at two and did it before he even got close to the finish line, so they didn't have to concern themselves with it. And I think Hall's going to be in the top four, probably. I think he's probably going to start with Muzzin, and Brody will start with Riley. And I think Lettinen and Bogosian will be the third pairing opening night. You know, that's my projection. I don't think that's crazy. I don't think that's some hot take. You guys can disagree.
No, but
go ahead.
I'd like to see Hall farther down, personally. I think he's a nice player, but I think he's a third pairing guy every day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a bit rich for him to be playing in the second pairing. He can, not taking anything away from him, but I think on a deeper team, he's a third pairing guy. And, you know, Bogosian, we'll see how it goes. If you know, it's easy, and I said this yesterday, I think, you know, anybody, Johnny, you could put the skates on and play with Victor Hedman and look pretty good. You know, like Bogosian, like Bogosian was the recipient of playing with some really good players. Now, he's a solid player himself, but, you know, is it the Bogosian of Buffalo?
And Buffalo, and nobody wanted him.
No, but I mean, it was.
I'm not saying he can't play in the NHL, but like, I don't think we can get swayed too much by the fact that he just won a cup, and I was there for the clinching game. That might have been the best game I've ever seen him play. Was Game 6, like as far as passes and reads. But I think we're quick to dismiss Dermott, who's played for the Leafs for the better part of 2 or 3 years here. So it's not like he's got to get scratched for some other newbie. Like he's not playing ahead of Sandin or Liljegren. It's Travis Dermott. He's been here for a while. And, you know, I think Ty goes to the incumbent, and I think Dermott's the incumbent. So I'm not so sure. Maybe you're right, Hayes, maybe to get them over here, they get the start. But when it's all said and done, Travis Dermott's had great underlying numbers in third pair responsibility. I don't know if he's shown that he can take more than that yet, but in that role, he's done really, really well. So I'm just, when I see Bogosian and I see Wayne Simmons and I, like,
I think great is
not
a bit
expecting
of a stretch.
Too much is going to be key in trying to understand what they're going to do for you.
Well, and Brian, you make a good point. Like opening night, like Lettinen's coming over, like they're going to give him every opportunity. Like that's I do believe that. Like you know, Dermott may be an incumbent guy, but Lettinen, I believe, is older, and
yes.
I think they also want to see what he's capable of, and that's tough to do from the press box. Like I think they're going to give him every opportunity to settle into the National Hockey League, and that might be at the expense of a guy like Dermott. That's you know,
well,
I think
that's what
a
I'm
fair
saying
because
we know it's not going to be at the expense of Morgan Riley, Jake Muzzin,
or
TJ Brody, right? Like those three, we know are playing.
Right.
I sense from the way they talk about Justin Hall and the way they played him last year, Hall is probably going to play somewhere in the top six. That doesn't mean he's a lock to play in the top four or pair again with Muzzin, but I wouldn't be surprised by that. But I think also at $2 million per, you know, that's a pretty big commitment, and $2 million in the press box is a pretty big hit. I think he will – it's more likely the scenario of Ty goes to the incumbent goes to Justin Hall because of the contract, because he shoots right, because he faced tougher competition in the past.
Play with Muzzin, yeah.
Yeah, and that's – I think it's probably a three-player race. Maybe more get involved if they have great camps. Maybe Sandin shows that he's really grown over the past 4 or 5 months and he battles a little bit. Maybe Liljegren finally has a great camp and puts himself in a conversation. But it's likely a battle for that final pairing between Lettinen, Dermott, and Bogosian.
Yep.
And, you know, it could be any
combination. I'm not willing to concede anything to those other two guys. I mean, I think Lettinen's going to have to show something in camp. And I guess, you know, I think Bogosian will serve a role and he'll play on occasion. I don't think he's playing 80% of the games, if healthy.
Well,
I think they just have too many other options. And I think, you know.
Well,
and we'll see how
depends
it goes,
on what
but,
those options look like, though, Johnny.
Yeah.
Like,
and I will say
play.
This though: you mentioned Dermott, like he had to be reading the tea leaves, seeing the cap run out, and be like, "I have nothing here.
Right.
I got no shot to ask for anything. It is take it or leave it." And the Leafs used all the levers they had because that's I mean, a third year, a second contract NHLer making 800 for like who's played pretty regularly. It's unheard of.
Well, was that his QO?
It was around that. It would have been. I'm not sure exactly where his like qualifying offer was.
Because I the only thing I could think of that he was, for lack of better words, lucky to get is a one-way, right? Like that's. I think a lot of times, Johnny. I don't know how you were, but for me, early on after my first contract, my whole focus was to get a one-way because that's guaranteed money, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why. Even like the soup man, Mikhaev, like it's not like he had a ton of leverage, but you know, you do sometimes either put in for arbitration or you do battle for certain things. A one way is something that is a bucket list thing for a guy who's still trying to establish himself at the NHL level. That's something that you try and check off your list.
I don't think you're right for sure, Noodles. Remember when you got a one way for the first time? It was a big deal. You're like,
it's huge.
I'm set.
But for
Dermott. He's never going to get through waivers. You know something? Detroit's not claiming Travis Dermott. He won't be able to get sent to the minors because he would get claimed if he has to go through a waiver wire.
Right.
And for the Leafs, it would almost be spiteful to make him take a two-way because you can sink $1 million in the minors. So it doesn't cost the Leafs salary cap situation anything to pay him $1 million. It just costs them actual dollars. And at this point, like, we'll give you 900. And if you don't make the team, you're in the minors. It's like you make 100. It doesn't matter to us. It's just money. So that would have been particularly aggressive in the negotiation if they tried to offer two-way.
Yeah,
anyone making under $1 million at this point.
Floating a two-way, I would have loved to be a fly on the wall for that reaction. That would not have gone over well.
But that is leverage. It is leverage from management.
It is.
I think they
want to believe in Travis Dermott.
I'm not convinced
that they believe that he is a guy that they can build with. Certainly not build around. He's not a building block player. But, you know, you mentioned his underlying numbers. Yeah, okay, on third pairing against third and fourth lines. Offensively, he brings nothing. Like, the offensive numbers just simply are not there, which I was surprised by when he first came up. I thought he was a guy who could give you something.
Skates so well.
Skates like very well. And I think has the ability to not, you know, play with the puck. He's not a guy who's going to drive play or look like a magician with the puck on a stick. But he doesn't. He's not choppy. He's not a guy who's just high and hard, get it out, I can't touch this thing.
Uh-huh.
So I think there should be a little bit more there. But you're dealing with a decent amount of sample size, like 157 NHL games. That's a fair amount, you know. And maybe this is just what he is a depth guy who's going to fight to get in and out of the lineup. And Dubas has said this week, you know, if they want to create competition, I don't think you can hand Travis Dermott something.
No,
like how are you creating competition if you're telling Dermott you're locked in opening night?
That makes no sense. Like, if you can't give it to Lettinen, you can't give it to Dermott.
But that's different, though, Johnny. I'm basing my Lettinen opinion on history. Ozhiganov, there were suitors. They got him. He played opening night. Zaitsev, there were suitors. They got him. He played. Mikheyev, there were suitors. They got him. He played. I think Barabanov's playing. I think Lettinen's playing. That doesn't mean they're playing 82.
Right.
If 10 games in, they say, boy, this isn't for you guys, then you're out. But right. It just feels to me, based on how the Leafs keep getting these guys – and my understanding is Lettinen is someone that was highly sought after. Like, he's lighting up the K again.
Yeah.
Right now, lighting up the K. That is not a hot take. That is a fact. He's got, like, 15 points in 13 games. In the KHL, those are massive.
It's tough to score in that league.
Exactly. Yes. And for a defenseman, he had suitors, and he chose the Leafs. And I would believe it was, wink, wink, you come in, you're playing. Now,
right.
You know, we'll see. Maybe things changed between when he signed and when he gets here. But you're telling me it's going to be that big of a difference, Travis Dermott to Mikko Lettinen opening night? I doubt it.
I
doubt it.
I'm with you on competition and not giving it to him and having him prove it. I'm just not conceding that he's, like, way behind the eight ball. I think he's just in the mix.
Yeah.
So, okay. Like, you're kind of giving it to Lettinen because of the contractual maybe promises made, or Bogosian because he's new. And I'm like, I'm not giving him that. I'm just like, we'll see who plays better. And I'm going to lump Sandin and Liljegren and the rest of them in there.
Right.
Whoever plays better, because none of those guys currently have done enough to say, I have to be played because of what I've done for this organization or another one.
Right.
Ron, here's another two things. I personally believe that Dermott has more. Like, I know, Hayes, you were saying, like, if you look at the stats in 157 games, he's not a point producer, but I think he's a guy that has a little bit more in the offensive flair through his skating if he can establish confidence and settle in and be an everyday guy, like either if it's a third pairing or push higher. I believe he has more. He still has to prove it. Secondly, it's a nice conversation, I would say, if you're a Leaf fan, that there is a lot of options now at the bottom of your roster for defensemen, because that wasn't the case a year ago. It was Marty Berenson who was basically going in if there was an injury, and Justin Hull was going to, you know, is a nice story and gets pushed up in the lineup and seizes his opportunity. But now when we're throwing around names like Dermott, Lettinen, Bogosian, and that's at the bottom of your defensive roster, that's a positive sign.
Yeah,
If you ask me.
Yeah,
that's a positive sign.
That is a good sign. And I would assume Dermott understands that he's still got to prove himself and show up and have a good camp. And I'm with you, Johnny, in terms of that message. I want to believe it. And it's cliched in a lot of ways, you know, that we're going to drop the puck and have battles. I think Sheldon Keefe's got a pretty good idea of what his lineup is going to look like. And we'll find out. You know, we'll find out.
A lot of bodies.
There are a lot of bodies.
Makes a good point. Like, a lot of bodies hanging around the bottom six and the bottom pair that, you know, whether it's going to be Jimmy Vesey or Engvall or Barabanov, of course, like, decent players are not going to be playing, you know, if everyone's healthy. So he may have an idea, but it feels like because there's so many different combinations available, you'd want to go with an open mind, just because who knows what Barabanov could be, and who knows what Wayne Simmonds looks like on the third line, on the fourth line, Spezza in the middle. Like, I don't know if he knows these guys well enough and how they are playing today, in 2021, and this team and this style. I don't know if he has those answers just yet.
Yeah, and that should be expected, probably. And when you look at it, you know, the five guys up front, you know, are playing, and you know pretty much where they're playing. Hyman, Matthews, Tavares, Marner, Nylander. Beyond that, it could be any combination in terms of, you know, who else is in the top six, who's on the third line, fourth line, press box, and then it's Riley, Muzzin, Brody on the back end. Beyond that, you know, it should be completely open competition, find the best combination, and then it's Freddie Anderson. right? And I think Jack Campbell solidified as the backup. So yep. I think the goaltending situation is pretty much locked in. But you're right. You know, there should be seven spots up front. You guys, you know, throw the puck on the ice, figure it out. It's on Sheldon Keefe to determine the best combination to put yourself in a position to win up front. And three spots on the back end. You know, it should be like that. And I'm sure it will be over the course of time. And I'm sure every guy will get an opportunity to prove who they are and what they bring. And, you know, this team, they haven't won a playoff round in 15 years. There shouldn't be any gimmies. There shouldn't be that many guarantees.
You think about Letton in the one advantage, though? He's playing.
Playing
so
right
now. If there's going to be a competition in camp, the other guys have been played for, what, 4 weeks in the last 8 months. Mm-hmm. He'll have been played, in one of the best leagues in the world going and playing really well. So he might have a leg up initially.
I always want to – I'm not trying to take the wind out of anybody's sails, but I always throw a little caution into the wind when we talk about guys dominating in other leagues.
Yep.
Because the KHL is not the NHL. You know who one of the best players in the KHL has been for many, many years? Do you remember Nigel Dawes,
yep.
Johnny?
Nigel Dawes. Yes.
Nigel Dawes.
Absolutely.
Nigel Dawes is the
He's
Wayne
Kazakhstanian
Gretzky.
Now.
He's the Wayne
Dude,
Gretzky of the KHL.
He plays for Kazakhstan.
I know.
No Come on.
He's
yes.
got the passport. He plays for Kazakhstan.
Well, that's a smart play.
We had him in Calgary. He's a fantastic little player. He is legitimately the Wayne Gretzky of the KHL.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, what was he over here? Third liner, maybe some second line minutes.
Barely like, cracked it, really. I mean, he wasn't here long.
Yeah, not for
another
long.
Another guy who dominated that league. I played with him in Minnesota. Ended up fighting him in practice because he hit me in the head four times in a row, and I threw my stick at him. Maxim Suchinski. Ever heard of that name? No.
Yes.
You would have, maybe, but.
Yeah, no, I'll grant you that, Noodles. I'm not like, disputing that. But,
I'm just saying.
Mikheyev's here. They just signed him, and he's playing. Right. And Zaitsev's still in the league. They gave him 7 years. There's counters to that as well. I'm not suggesting Mikko Lehtinen's coming here to win a Norris.
Right.
That's not what anyone's suggesting. And we're talking about the third pairing. Right.
Right.
But, yes, you caution is totally advisable. You know,
right.
I think we need to relax on, wow, he's lighting up wherever it is. I got you.
Better than the alternative.
But better than the alternative,
you're
absolutely.
Right, you're right.
We'll pick up on this with Ray just after 5. We've got a big show today. Peter King coming up on the Thursday night or last night. Game 3 of the World Series tonight. We'll get to that as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Game 3 of the World Series tonight. We'll get to that later this afternoon. UFC back in action tomorrow. Habib back in the octagon in more than a year. We have not seen Habib in a long time.
Did you guys – we got to get it to Kenny Florian coming, don't we, a little bit?
Yeah.
Yep.
Did you see Habib's weigh-in? Like, he had to drop all the way down.
He barely made it. Barely made it.
Birthday suit, and he looked relieved to make weight.
Well, 155, like, you got to cut weight. Like, I know a few of those guys that, like, they're 25 pounds heavier they walk around at.
Right.
Like, he probably walks around at 175 pounds.
I wonder how much he weighs, Noodles, on fight night. Like, how much did he put back on in the next 2 days?
As much as you can.
We should ask
basically.
Kenny.
10,
like,
15? 17?
Yeah, so.
We'll ask Kenny. He'll let us in on the secrets of cutting weight, but that was crazy. He went right down to nothing to make weight.
I wouldn't have been surprised if there was a porta potty there too. He was going to push out the last half a pound because it was. honest to God, did you see that? Like the look on his face, he was looking at the numbers like he was nervous.
Yeah.
Because that
you got to make it, right?
Like, yeah, you got to make it.
It is so ridiculous that you have to make it, and then by the time you fight, you've put on 15 pounds. Like, what's the point?
Right.
But we'll catch up with Kenny Florian in about an hour. Ray coming up in about a half an hour. Peter King here in just a moment. We got to play this Joe Buck call last night. The Daniel Jones trip is just it's a highlight blooper.
Yeah.
It's a memory, you know. And I thought Buck just hit the nail on the head. He was like, there's just an ounce of like disgust, disbelief. It's a whole cocktail of emotion. Here was Joe Buck last night.
From the 12, Jones keeps, gets a block, takes off, and he is gone. Trying to stay upright, and he trips. Absolutely all alone, and he trips. Going to the end zone and ends up carrying it as it is for 80. But a walk-in touchdown, and he tripped himself.
Yeah, the most deceptive tweet of all time. NFL's Twitter account, like 10 minutes after that, wrote, 80-yard run from Daniel Jones. Like, yeah, technically it was an 80-yard run, but it should have been to the house. And trying to stay
upright.
Someone
got his hamstring about 60 yards in.
Yeah,
he
sniper.
He starts like limping a little
like
bit or something.
Well, he lost his balance or something. I don't know what happened. He's like all of a sudden leaning forward.
Like he's running downhill almost.
All of a sudden he forgot how to run here.
Yeah, that's ugly. Here's Peter King, our NFL insider from NBC. Is this the butt fumble for him? How does he get past this? How does Daniel Jones get past that last night, Peter?
Well, the weird thing about the butt fumble was a negative play, you know, and to some degree, this was a negative play, but it was an 80-yard gain. It'll be the longest run of Daniel Jones' career if he plays 20 years in the NFL.
Right.
And so it'll be a funny meme forever. It's such a weird, weird play. And the weirdest thing about it, you know, if there are many times where you see players in the open field, and players are in the open field, and you see them sneak a furtive glance left, right, just to see, is there anybody around him at all? If Daniel Jones had done that, and I couldn't tell, it didn't look like he did. But if he had done that, he would have seen there was nobody within 10 yards of him. He could have walked into the end zone once he got to about the 20-yard line, once he started tripping.
Right.
But that was the weirdest thing about it. It goes to, like, my feeling about Daniel Jones as a football player, okay? He started 19 games in the NFL. All 19 games, he has either thrown an interception or fumbled or both. And there is this sense when I watch him play, he just waits too long in the pocket, a split second too long. And again, look, I'm not blaming him because Andrew Thomas, the first-round pick, the fourth pick in the draft, is really not good. And he's killing the Giants right now. But just in general, he doesn't have Bill Bradley, the old basketball player for the Knicks 50 years ago, wrote a book, and it was called A Sense of Where You Are. And it was all about how one of his strengths as a basketball player and as a person is to understand where you are in life and where you are on the court. Daniel Jones does not have a great sense of where he is.
Well, with all that being said, if you were the GM of a team and you had two options, you could pick one of these two guys to build around, would you take Daniel Jones or Sam Darnold?
Oh, I definitely take Daniel Jones. I think Daniel Jones has a chance to be terrific. I really do. I can't tell you about Sam Darnold right now because he's playing with one hand tied behind his back. It's hard for him to show whether he's any good or not. And it's hard for Daniel Jones to do that too, because he's got a bad offensive line too. But I feel terrible for Sam Darnold. And again, look, the Jets are in an incredibly tricky spot. Because you tell me, if you're Trevor Lawrence and you have people advising you, I mean, if you were a smart person advising Trevor Lawrence, wouldn't you say you really should seriously consider doing what Eli Manning did in 2004 and doing what John Elway did in 1983, which is announcing, I am not playing for Team X. You know, for Elway, I'm not playing for the Baltimore Colts and Frank Kush. For Eli Manning, I'm not playing for the San Diego Chargers. And so, you know, you have to just think about that now, whether Trevor Lawrence would say, I am not going to this clown show known as the New York Jets.
that would be bold, but there is history there, Peter, as you mentioned. Young quarterbacks in the wrong situations can struggle and kind of end their careers before they get going. So that leads us down to Miami, where it's Tua time, apparently. is this the right time to make him the starter, even though Fitzpatrick's played pretty well so far this year?
Here's the thing that I guess that I would say about, because I've thought about this so much, and part of me says this is the classic case. I was talking to one head coach today, and he said, "Wow, that one took me by surprise." And I said, "You know, it's one of those cases that a lot of times a head coach knows more. Of course, he's going to know more about what's going on in his own building than I would, and that you would, that we all would. All right." Even the beat guys who are covering the team, of course. And in this particular case, I think Brian Flores looked at his team and he said, we're 3-3. We've got an incredibly tough stretch of schedule coming up. You know, when we come out of our bye, we got the Rams at home, we're at Arizona, and then we got the Chargers. Now, you know, say what you want about the Chargers. And then later in the year, you got a really tough stretch. You got the Chiefs and the Patriots and, trying to remember who else, might be the Raiders, I forget. But you're Brian Flores and you say, I think we can be a B-minus team with Ryan Fitzpatrick. And I think our upside is significantly higher. And I'm willing to risk losing a couple of games that maybe we would have won with Fitzpatrick. I'm willing to risk it because I don't think we're going to go very far with Fitzpatrick as our quarterback, but I think we might go far with Tua Tagovailoa as our quarterback.
With Peter King, NFL insider with NBC. Getting back to the victors last night, we focused on the Giants, but Philly, you know, they find a way to storm back and win that game. They're 2-4-1. I had a buddy of mine who's an Eagles fan pleading to me last night that they're actually a decent team with a lot of injuries, and they can legitimize the NFC East once all of these pieces return. Are you buying that argument? Do you think Philly's got a shot at being at least a decent team in the NFC East?
Well, I mean, that's like saying I'm a handsome guy if you put me in a pit with seven alligators. I'm the most handsome, attractive guy in that pit. But
yes.
I don't know. It, you know, I look at the NFC East and say, I think there's a legitimate chance that this division ends with a winner with six or seven wins. The key for Philadelphia, in my opinion, I mean, look, I'm not saying that they can't do it or they won't do it. But if you look at Philadelphia's schedule, and I'm looking at it right now, starting in week 12, Seattle, Green Bay, New Orleans, Arizona. And I think Arizona is rising. So they're going to be playing four teams that are either right at the top of the NFC or are going to be playoff contenders in four consecutive weeks. And, you know, it's one thing to say that they're better than the teams in the NFC East, but what does that really matter? They're good compared to playing a junior varsity schedule, you know, in a junior varsity division. But I guess the thing I would say, I like the Eagles, but the guys who are coming back, you know, they're not going to be able to fix their offensive line this year. They're going to have to patchwork that thing the rest of the year. That's number one. Number two, you know, Carson Wentz still makes some decisions and some plays in the course of a game that a quarterback of his pedigree absolutely should not make. His interception that he threw into double coverage in the end zone last night was, quite frankly, disturbing. Because that is one of the dumbest throws that you'll see in the NFL in any week. And I think the one other thing I would say is that their secondary is a patchwork mess, and they're lucky to have the defensive front they have because their back end is just not very good. So they are the best team in the NFC East, but I don't know what that means other than unfairly they'll get a home game in the playoffs.
With Peter King, our NFL insider, the trade deadline less than 2 weeks away. and there's always big names out there. There's very rarely massive action. I read a story today, or at least a rumor, maybe it was just someone hoping it would come true, that maybe J.J. Watt and the Packers would make sense, with Houston being 1-5. J.J.'s from Wisconsin. It wouldn't quite be like Reggie White signing there, but I can only imagine how people would react. They'd go nuts in Green Bay. That's a big name. Maybe Matt Ryan is a guy that gets shipped out in Atlanta. You know, these are big names. Is there any possibilities there? Could you see anything like that happening?
The J.J. Watt thing would not shock me, but Matt Ryan, I've heard reliably that Matt Ryan and Julio Jones are not going anywhere in Atlanta. And it's pretty hard to trade for a quarterback in the middle of a season, honestly. I mean, think about it. You know, you're asking, let's say the Dallas Cowboys trade for Matt Ryan, which they wouldn't do, but they trade for Matt Ryan, and you know, he's got to learn the system overnight. It's just, I don't think that a huge quarterback is going to get traded at the deadline. But I do think that it will be a very active trading deadline, and that there are a lot of players. I think the New York Giants will definitely listen on a few of their players, Evan Engram, Golden Tate. I think that the Jets would definitely listen on one of the best slot receivers in football, Jamison Crowder. They'd listen on a linebacker who's pretty good, Avery Williamson. The Falcons would listen on Tack McKinley. I think they would like to trade him. And, you know, so I think you're going to see some guys at the trading deadline go. Ryan Kerrigan is a pass rusher who's still got something left in Washington. David Njoku in Cleveland, I think, could go for even a decent offer. So I think there's going to be some activity. You know what's weird about the trading deadline? So you follow my logic here. The Baltimore Ravens traded for Yannick Ngakoue, the pass rusher and defensive end from Minnesota. Now, they have a bye week this week. And they told the Vikings, we need him in Baltimore by Thursday. So you say, so envision that. That's 10 days before they would play a game against the Pittsburgh Steelers a week from Sunday. So you're thinking to yourself, why do they need him in there on Thursday? Because the COVID protocols say that a new acquisition or a player you get for either your practice squad or your team that you're signing as a street free agent has got to test negative for COVID for 5 consecutive days. So
wow.
they needed Yannick Ngakoue right. to be in their facility so that this morning, crack of dawn, he could take his COVID test. He'll go back to the hotel. Saturday, crack of dawn, COVID test back to the hotel. Sunday, crack of dawn, COVID test back to the hotel. Monday and Tuesday, exact same thing. If he passes 5 days in a row, Yannick Ngakoue can show up on the first day of the work week for the Baltimore Ravens next Wednesday for their biggest game of the year. They're playing the Pittsburgh Steelers at home a week from Sunday. But he gets to have a full week of practice with his new team. That's why he needed to be there 6 days before the practice week actually began. It's a crazy time in the NFL. But for the Ravens, it was crucial that they get Ngakoue in that game against Pittsburgh. And so in order to do that, they had to get him in the city by Thursday night, and that's exactly what happened.
Wow, that's wild. Yeah, I wasn't aware of all those protocols. I'm not surprised by them, considering what we're going through in 2020. But we'll see what happens this weekend. We'll do it again next week. Thank you for this, Peter.
All the best, guys. Thank you.
Peter King, NFL Insider from NBC. Yeah, some big names out there,
yeah,
potentially. We'll see.
Makes you think about the trade deadline, though. Games are coming up. Like, if you make that trade, guys won't be able to practice with you for
right.
basically the whole week. And maybe they get cleared 5 days in a row, but they're jumping into their first walkthrough on Saturday or something.
Yeah. That would explain why Le'Veon Bell wasn't playing, you know, Monday night. He wasn't
right.
even there.
It changes the complexion. It's like a 2-week window for a 16-week season.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a pretty big price to pay of missing,
time.
You know, that much time.
I'd like to see J.J. Watt in a Packers uniform.
Oh, that would be
Is J.J. Watt still good, Hayes?
I don't know if he can still play.
I mean, you wouldn't know it because Houston's so bad, but he can get off the line, man. Like he's still getting doubled from time to time, and he's not what he was 5 years ago. And he's had some gruesome injuries. But I think he feels like a guy that would just be rejuvenated. You know, he's not going to give you like 2 or 3 years of greatness, but you bring him in, you say we need, you know, 6-7 games out of you in the playoffs. Yeah. I think he'd still have a lot left in the tank. I don't know what the price tag would be on that. And my understanding is the Packers they're looking for receivers.
Well, you know, it is Houston, so you got
to. But Bill O'Brien's not there anymore. Bill O'Brien's not there, so maybe you finally get
pleased.
That's
right.
Who knows?
It's too bad.
There's a GM meeting going on with the NHL today, and I guess Bill Daly's speaking to Pierre LeBrun about potential start dates. Well, there's a report out there when it comes to the NBA start date, and I was surprised by this report. We'll tell you about it. We'll get into it next. Game 3 of the World Series tonight, and the Gold Glove finalists were unveiled yesterday in baseball. I just saw this quote. Kevin Kiermaier was not one of the 3 finalists in center field in the American League, which is unheard of, really. I mean, he's just been the man in center for a long, long time. Even when Kevin Pillar was making his push, it was always like, okay, stop. Like, he's not as good as Kiermaier. And the Rays are all about analytics. They're all about those underlying numbers. And yet Kiermaier said he's upset and disappointed over not being a gold medal final or gold glove finalist. He said, quote, if it's solely based on computers and numbers, I don't know what numbers that computer was looking at, but I believe they got it wrong. So he's cut. You can't have that in Tampa, man. You got to be married to those numbers down there with the Rays. How dare you?
Well, something's working. They got a payroll that's about, a fifth, an eighth of the Dodgers, and they're in the finals. So.
It's like 30 grand, and they're in the World Series.
It's the Travis Dermott of World Series payrolls.
Yep, exactly. There you go. Bargain.
How about this report? I was not expecting this earlier today. Shams Charania and Woj, all the big shooters in the NBA. December 22nd, target date to start the season, 72 games.
Kind of like that.
That's
I was
good
not
news
expecting
for basketball.
That. Very good news for fans and for basketball.
But, I mean, was there any parameters? Are we talking multiple bubbles? Are we talking you know, cross-border, you know, the Raptors are going to be playing potentially, like you say, out of, what, Louisville, wasn't it, that you said?
Yeah, but that appears to have been shot down. I think Lewenberg was saying, like, no, Louisville is not happening.
Right, but 72 games would be amazing, but, you know, what's it look like? Because everyone coming out of that bubble, Danny Green, I think the next day in the L.A. Times was like, I'm never doing that again. I just spent 100 days.
They're not going in a
bubble. There'll be no bubble. They'll just be on their own, like football. They're just bouncing around their own thing, bouncing, you know, stadium to stadium. Raptors probably will, if they can order the border crossing in time. If not, think about an NHL arena. It's like a basketball arena that doesn't have a basketball team. Like a Louisville or whatever, Nashville or something. They could just, you know, go and play in some building that would be their home for a little while these things go on. But I'm surprised. I thought for sure it was going to be in the new year, maybe MLK Junior Day. That was kind of, they were targeting that. But the fact that if they get 72 games in, that is significant.
That's a lot. And
that's a lot of revenue, right? That's what you're targeting, revenue, right?
Right. Exactly.
And TV contracts honored. So they don't have to give money back there.
And fans at some point too, right? Like that is what they're planning, and it's indoors, which will be a new leap, but down in the States, I think they're going to do it. Like, the Dome is going to be closed tonight for game 3 of the World Series, and I haven't seen anything on them not letting fans in. So they're closing the roof because the weather down in Arlington isn't great. So there will be fans in a closed arena tonight, I believe, for the World Series. And it makes me wonder a couple of different things. One, you know, is this about the Olympics? They want to get to the Olympics in Tokyo, which would begin towards the end of July. Do they want to be a part of that? Hence why they're going to start as quickly as they can. Do they know something we don't know about rapid testing, about, you know, whatever it might be? That wouldn't shock me. And I wonder what their counterpart in terms of the schedule thinks about this, and that would be the National Hockey League. Like, if the NBA gets going December 22nd, what are you waiting for?
No, you have more Canadian
Other
than the
teams.
Canadian border thing.
Yes.
Right? Like, right. Which is a big league one. Being in Canada, which is significant and something to work through, but it would not be a good look if basketball's like, we're going good to go December 22nd, and they're careful and have great protocols and concern for their players, and the NHL's like, no, we're not going until February. You got to scratch your head there and say, well, what are you waiting on?
Yeah, what's the difference? Outside of the Canadian teams, which is a difference, of course, but if you're doing a Canadian market division anyway, then... Right. You would think they'd be able to figure that out. We'll pick this up at 5 o'clock. Race coming up. Ray Ferraro will join us. Kenny Florian on the UFC action tomorrow. Habib taking on Justin Gaethje. Game 3 of the World Series tonight. We got a lot cooking this afternoon. Travis Dermott's signed. We'll get back into that as well. Mike Johnson's in here with Jamie Noodles McLennan. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.